a family staying together and loving each other in this day and age is a thousand Everests. Like, it's awesome.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Every Knee Shall Bow, your weekly Catholic podcast on evangelization and discipleship. My name is Michael Gomer Gormley, and I am joined today by Dave Deadlift, more like Alive in Christ Lift, Van Vickle. How you doing, Dave?
Oh, I feel like that's the kind of t-shirt that people would sell, and you'd sell a lot because of nerds that would buy.
Yeah, Christian bodybuilders at Word on
Fire. Yeah.
They would all.
I'm so glad he said that. Yeah. That is awesome.
They're all jacked. So I thought of that literally at 4:30 this morning when a raging thunderstorm kept me and my kids awake. Almost flooded my house, so that was great. But I was like, I got to come up with something stupid for Dave's nickname today. All I could come up with was a cheat. Because you had that post on Facebook of the people dancing around like it was from a skit from youth group. And I was like, what's like a youth groupy thing? And I was like, oh, that's a youth groupy thing.
That's funny.
What inspired you to post the picture of a 90s turnaround skit? Or,
no, don't you remember?
It was totally close to the heart. Oh, the total eclipse. Yes. Never mind.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Ask us the answer.
Yeah, exactly. So, because everybody was talking about the apocalyptic stuff with the eclipse. And I was thinking, man, they obviously don't know the real meaning of that, the total eclipse of the heart, which every 90s youth minister put on for their kids during retreats.
Man, it's
do you
so
remember
funny
that the, skit? Do you remember?
It, have, I like, never had that skit.
Really?
I never had that skit. I had
How
turnaround.
Did you ever give your life to the Lord? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we had turnaround.
What is that?
Turn around.
That's the same song going.
Is that?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm flipping it in my head. You're right. You're right. But, you know, at the end of youth group, so your youth group was different than mine because you were in a charismatic community, which was probably rocking the Protestant stuff longer than my experience was.
Probably.
Right.
Yeah.
So in my world, the only time I ever saw that stuff principally until I went to Life Teen my junior year was Steubenville conferences. And it was not turnaround. Bring Me to Life with Evanescence.
No, that's not real, is it?
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? You can Google that right now. YouTube, Bring Me to Life. Oh yeah.
Oh, the things we did back then.
Wake me up inside. I remember leading a student evangelization team at Francisca,
and we went. This is going to be so great. This is not. You're not serious.
100%
they're college
serious.
Students.
College students, and we led the retreat for high school students.
Oh, okay.
We had two incredible things that happened, but I'm gonna shelve the really incredible thing that I thought was the funniest thing I've ever done in my life. We'll pause that. But the other one is people give talks with secular songs to put a Jesus spin on it, and there was like a.
That used to be a thing in the 90s. That was a big deal.
Yeah. It was. And this one girl played a Garth Brooks song. And everyone
I hate so much of what you're saying right now.
And everyone, like, it's so funny to me because it would never dawn on me to do that. I might like quote a lyric, but I'm not going to, you know. Oh, gosh. So she passed.
It's like a Michael Scott way of giving a Catholic talk from The Office, isn't it? Totally. Yes.
In order to talk about transubstantiation, I have a song here. It's from the hit movie Tangled.
And you're like doing a mime in the background? Like,
no, so she passed it. She had all the lyrics printed out. And she like led in prayer, passed out the lyrics, and then pushed play on a boombox. Remember those little CD boomboxes?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah,
and, and the kids were just staring at the piece of paper like, what is this? It was
this
beautiful.
Is too much.
It was beautiful.
Go over that. The problem is, as even if I were 4 years old, I would have rolled my eyes at that. That's my. I would have come out of the womb rolling my eyes. At
what are you looking at the ceiling, Dave? Is there something on the ceiling I'm missing, Dave? Why are your eyes up there so hard?
Oh, that is funny. Oh man, that's great.
Yeah. So, did you give your heart to the Lord after the turnaround skit?
No.
No.
No. It was apostolic preaching that led me to give my life to the Lord. Father Dave Pavanka, a couple speakers that I don't remember who they were at a Soupville conference. No, I don't think it was him. I think I remember him. Yeah, no, I remember just, you know, for the first time, like actually hearing the gospel, really. So
that your conversion story reminds me of a song. For the first time in forever. And what this means is like the Lord is from
this
eternity.
This is the worst thing.
And he's speaking
ever.
Into your soul.
I remember the year that the song, that the heart song, My Heart Song Sings to You came out. I did like 30 women, about. Like 30 women's retrets based with the theme heart song. Like, what is your heart song? And every time they'd call, I'd be like, they're like, well, we're wondering, like, I don't know if you've thought about this, but we could do a theme of the retreat for like these young women, like on like my heart song. And I'd be like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's the default. When was this? I'm not familiar with this song.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like
10 right? years ago, 5 years ago.
No, way more than that. Like 15, I think. 15.
Okay. Yeah. We're old men in the industry, Dave. Old men in the industry.
Yeah, that was when I did teenage stuff and confirmation retreats, and I wanted to die after everyone.
Oh, man, I love those. I love them so much.
I know you do.
I was just talking with the church. I'm going to do a parish mission out there. Super excited. Fans of the show. Great folks. And I was like, do you have a school? And they're like, we have a K-8. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, you want to speak to all of the kids? And I was like, no. Just middle schoolers. Maybe even just eighth graders. I don't care. Yeah, younger kids going to be difficult. So, which
I like
is
to
funny.
Lead them in adoration. That's like I love to do little kids adoration. That's like one of my favorite things to do.
Gotcha. It is funny for me because I need to re-listen to Total Eclipse of the Heart because now that I'm a volunteer youth minister again, I got to dust off my black hoodie that I will wear over my face backwards because I'm a demon dancing around trying to get the nerdy kid to drink alcohol.
This is terrible.
Oh, anyways. Man. My favorite part of those skits, and then we'll actually get into the topic of today, which is marriage part two. This one's not about sex, is because the first one was, is my favorite part was there was always a scene where the kid who's that the skit is about walks into school and a nerdy kid gets all their books knocked out of their hand. And then that kid laughs at them with all the other kids. But then after they meet the man dressed in a bedsheet who is Jesus, with or without a magic marker beard on his face from the youth group skits, they would the same nerdy kid would get shoved again and his books would go everywhere. But to show the sign of conversion, the character would then bend down and pick up all the books with the kid and not laugh at them mercilessly.
I did not. I don't know if I ever saw that, but
do
you want to hear that how true to life that is?
Well, we're 8 minutes in and we haven't talked about marriage, so the answer is absolutely yes, I do.
Yes, I transferred schools in high school, and the very first day I was at my new school, I was in Spanish class, and my teacher was like this French lady, Miss Prevost, I remember, and there was this kid who got made fun of all the time, and some guy walked up to his desk and pushed his books off. And I didn't like stuff like that. So
You're the anti-bully.
Yeah, I didn't stand for that. So I went to that kid's desk and pushed his books off. And
your first day?
Yeah, my very first day. And it gets so much worse. This story gets so much worse. And he came up to me to retaliate. And I put my hand on the back of his neck. And I thought he would pull back. But he didn't. And I slammed his head down on my desk. And he turned around and his nose broke and bled all over the teacher. That was my first day at my new school.
And did you get immediately expelled or what?
No. It was an all boys school. And it was kind of like the kind of place where I literally remember a teacher being to me and one of my best friends being like, just go outside and get this over with. Like that was, yeah. But they were upset that it was my first day, and that's how I introduced myself to the school.
And no one messed with
I'm
you
still
the rest
embarrassed.
Of you.
I'm still embarrassed by it.
What a part of me thinks that is the coolest thing ever, and I'm so happy you did that. Is that a bad part of me? Do I need to go to?
Yeah.
Do I need to uproot this?
Okay. Yeah, you don't do. That's not how you deal with things like that.
But isn't?
I mean, it did deal with it, but
yeah, no one bothered that kid again, or you, and you didn't have any friends.
Marriage. That's what we're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah, let's talk about marriage. Speaking of not having friends,
sorry.
No. We want to go into, let me close that tab on peptides and let me open up the tab on marriage and God's plan. So yeah, let's go deep into marriage today, because one of the things that I feel, I think of all the sacraments, you know, we might doubt the Eucharist, but we actively hate the church's teaching on marriage.
Yep.
Because the culture has done such a 180 from the church's teaching on marriage. I still think our hearts long for things like permanence and exclusivity, but right. our culture does not. And so why don't you just start us off talking about these things that characterize a truly Christian marriage.
Yeah. So what we have to remember is, like, right, there's just a few things that, like, we throw out there. Gomer mentioned permanence, openness to life, the unity between the couple, right? The kind of the part that we sort of like enthrone now is that part. But what we have to remember is that marriage is not like just an agreement. It's not a contract at all. In fact, that's the opposite of what we're looking for, that it's a covenant, that it was created by God, right? So we kind of think of, like, you know, the kind of the cultural norm would be, well, tell the church to stay out of personal things like marriage. Well, marriage is God's. Like, he gave this to us, right? He gave it to us. It's within creation that a man and wife come together. So we have to look at it with a completely new paradigm, right? We have to look at it through the eyes of what it means to be, you know, created, a creature, what it means to be someone who following the Lord and someone who has to live within his law in order to be happy. So we got to go back once again to Eden and realize, like, right, that God creates them and that marriage, first and foremost, is total and complete permanence.
And I think this is so difficult for our modern world because we despise the hemming in of our freedom. I can remember one of the several times that I broke up with Shannon, the really bad time, let me put it that way. It wasn't because I was discerning the priesthood, which was the first maybe two times. Yikes. But it was
classic,
honestly,
Franciscan thing.
It was a fear of losing my freedom that I didn't have fully articulated. You know, like, it felt like I was getting hemmed in. That's the phrase I use to describe it. I'm being hemmed in. And if I had to be hemmed in, I wish it were with Shannon, but it still felt like there was, not to sound too dramatic, but it was like a boa constrictor choking the life out of me. Maybe that is too dramatic.
Oh my gosh, Shannon.
I'm just kidding. But
that,
like,
woman is a saint.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, I don't know how she does it. But Pope John Paul talked about how in our freedom, we give our freedom away.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that part. That's my favorite.
Yeah, and in giving your freedom away into something as exclusive and as permanent as marriage, you actually enter into a whole new dimension of freedom, which is paradoxical to the world. That's the part that the world refuses to understand. Like, I listen to anti-marriage people like Bill Maher, and he always talks about being a lifelong bachelor and marriage is stupid and he'll never get married, but he has fun and he does his, you know, gets his jollies. Yeah. And I just remember, like, hearing all this stuff and I'm like, right, because they conceive of freedom as freedom from constraint and they see marriage as nothing but a series of constraints.
Can I tell you something that, I don't know, maybe is scandalous? It's scandalous to me when I think it, but, and now I'm going to say it, so it makes me nervous. But givenness is the greatest thing ever, right? Like, I love it so much as a concept in reality. Like, givenness is something that, like, you just, it is something, like, it's such a fast track to heaven, okay? Like what you're saying, to give away your freedom. And I would, obviously, you know, Gomer, so, like, and everybody hopefully listening knows, like, I would do anything to have Amber back.
Yeah.
But that being said, I am so thankful that I had the chance to practice givenness through 4 years of sickness and even to the end, because, like, it's, I guess in a certain sense, like, where the rubber meets the road. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that it was, I'm just so thankful that I got that chance to, like, you know, you say to your wife, right, I would die for you. I would do anything for you. I would do all these things for you. And then you know, I got the chance to to do that for her, like to live totally, completely taking care of her without any human, I don't know, whatever you want to say, reciprocity or anything like that at that point, right? That she was unable to. So
yeah, and people don't realize.
Now you got me all emotional.
Yeah, I mean, like being a caregiver for years, right? It is a living martyrdom, right? Like you're constantly at the needs of the other, as you know, and in all the different ways, just for their good, because they can no longer do those things themselves.
Yeah,
and there is no reciprocity. Right, it is all in a certain extent. There is only in the sacrament of holy matrimony. Right,
right.
There's a gift of love that goes deeper than acts of love can even express, and that's where you realize like marriage is a mystery, it is a sacrament, it is a vocation. It shapes how you get to heaven, and you, in serving her, you were bringing yourself closer to heaven, and her, in being served by you, was bringing herself closer to heaven because. You know, Amber was not a lazy person. Not at all. And so I know, like, for my wife, one of her hardest things to deal with is when she's rendered helpless, right? So when we, you know, post the miscarriages and stuff, we have people bringing meals, and she's just racked with embarrassment, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, honey, let other people love you.
Right.
And she's like, but it's so hard. And I'm like, I know, but that's the point, you know? And there's a martyrdom even in... And the helplessness of being like, I can't do this and I have to own it.
Yeah,
and St. Thomas Aquinas expressed this beautifully where he said in one of his prayers, give me the liberality to give to those when I'm in need or when they are in need, and give me the humility to ask of those when I am in need. And, you know, for some people, it's very easy to be generous. And for other people, it's very easy to ask. And the other thing feels like a martyrdom. And so we're called to do both. And marriage is one of those things. We're doing those two things. Giving generously and receiving humbly is a constant if it's going well.
Yeah, it's a natural way to like follow every saying, every maxim of the gospel, right? It's like you're it's there every day, and so it's like an amazing thing. Now, Gomer, let's talk about the permanence and the openness to life thing, okay? Because I think like a major question people have these days is the idea of permanence and what exactly that means. You can't go into marriage thinking if this doesn't work out, right? Like you're not allowed to do that. In fact, would that nullify a marriage?
Yeah. Yeah. You cannot have like a prenuptial agreement because you're planning.
Even with yourself, right?
Yeah. You're planning on a divorce.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so what we see is like what happens is a lot of people don't have that permanence, or they don't have the idea of actually living as a married person. So they're willing to get into the contract part of it, the legal aspect of it, but they're not planning to actually live as a married person. Well, that's not marriage. That's not what this is. What we're talking about is full givenness, like what Gomer mentioned, is to give yourself totally to another person and to know that that will be forever. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Permanence is from our Lord. Have you seen this viral clip that's going around of Megyn Kelly, quote unquote, going to confession to Bishop Barron about her annulment?
I mean, I saw that it happened, but I haven't watched it. No.
I just watched the first part where she kind of confesses, right? And she said basically starting the annulment process, she thought it'd be like liberating and freeing because she's been married to her second husband for 16 years.
Wow. And she goes to mass. That long?
Yeah. Oh, she goes to mass all the time. She does all this stuff. She's like, but doing this, she said, I thought it'd be freeing, but I am so resentful of the church. And she's like, I didn't go to mass at all during Lent. I didn't give up anything for Lent. I'm just doing this paperwork.
Why?
I hate it. Because she feels like what she kept saying was, this is just man interfering in my relationship with God. And you know, he answered, the very first part of his answer was very smart, which is like, I shouldn't be answering this question. This is a very pastoral question. Like, you need to sit down with the priest you trust and respect and have him walk you through this. But if I could, obviously you want me to make some comments. So I appreciate him saying that. But my thing with permanence is it is very hard to actually believe that today, that we are called. I mean, think about the marital vows known as the consents, which if you don't study Catholic theology about marriage, you don't even know they're called consents.
Right.
But they're called the marital consent. And what you're saying is I consent to the future. When husbands and wives write their own vows in Protestant churches, Reverend Timothy Keller said, they often praise the quality of their lover and their own love here and now.
Yeah.
But the purpose of a vow or the consents is to talk about steadfastness in my love for you, come what may, in the future. It's a pledge of future love. So you say, in sickness and in health, you say for richer and for poorer, or like my wife did at our wedding, or for poorer, she literally mumbled it as a joke. It's fine. I love it when my wife makes jokes out of her vows. I'm so wounded. But and then for better, for worse. Right? Now, for better, for worse doesn't mean in the presence of spousal abuse and violence and stuff like that. But it does mean, like, if your husband loses his job and sinks into a depression, like, you're still married to that person.
Right.
Right. And it does mean if they're battling sin and, you know, whatever it might be, you're still married to that person.
Right. Right.
And this mutual support that we're supposed to offer, what I have found is if it doesn't, because we're fed a steady diet of fairy tale, modern rom-com style visions of marriage, if it doesn't make me emotionally happy all the time or most of the time or much of the time, then we begin to immediately become resentful and bitter and we pull ourselves out.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I have seen this again and again and again. And there are some couples when they're telling me their story, I just want to be like, yeah, and?
Right.
Well, the man I married isn't the man that he is today. Okay.
You aren't either.
Yeah. I've been five men since my wife married me 14 years ago. Like, we don't get to do this.
Yeah, no, I get. So I think that, like, the catechism, you right away, the catechism treats marriage in a different way than other sacraments because of exactly the complicated situation that you're in. So there's like three sections right off the beginning: marriage under in the order of creation, marriage under the regime of sin, and marriage under the pedagogy of the law, and then a fourth, marriage in the Lord. And I think the reason you have those sections is because, look, it's there's something natural about it, right? It's within created order, number one. Number two, under the regime of sin, man, we've messed it up worse than anything, right? When you talk about, you know, like talk about like Shakespearean plays or Greek tragedies, right? You take the best thing and you make it the worst, right? That's sex, right? 100%, okay? Then under the law, like God trying to teach us once again to go back to Eden. And then finally, the only way that's going to work is in the Lord, right? That the Lord is going to give us this grace. So you like that complicated situation is how it has to be viewed. It's not an easy thing. And that's why kind of what you said about the interview. Now I kind of want to watch the interview with Bishop Barron. It's good that he said that, right? Like you should be talking about this with a priest because right. We're not just like imposing some crazy law. There's people involved here. There's personalities. There's humanity. There's sin. There's law. There's all these kinds of things. And we have to see marriage like the fullness of it. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night when I was thinking about, oh, tomorrow we're going to talk about marriage again. You know, we're in the middle of this Eucharistic revival from bishops, you know, from the bishops, right? Like, I think probably next we need the marriage revival, right? We need to refocus what it means to be married as a Catholic because there is no difference for most people between a Catholic marriage and the understanding of Catholic marriage and what the rest of the world views as marriage.
Yeah. And there are wounds to marriage that our culture sets up, which is damning right out the gate if you are too worldly. And you might not think of yourself as too worldly, but if you believe that marriage is nothing other than a domestic arrangement for the emotional support and that's it, we are deeply wrong. Marriage is principally ordered for the procreation and education of children.
Yeah, right.
And if you start with procreation and then you go to the good of the spouses and their union, that is how you order marriage correctly. If you start with the support of spouses and the union of spouses, and then from there you go to the procreation and education of children, I think you're even if you uphold the second one, you're on the wrong foot because marriage is an institution ordered to the future, right? It is an institution rooted in the goodness of creation, which is why it's the primordial sacrament. that is all about raising kids in a stable environment. But what ends up happening is we put my needs and my, and in our modern age, part of the things that we have to deal with is we are in the process of jettisoning things like duty, right? Obedience,
yeah,
honor. And we're jettisoning those things for things like being true to myself, being authentic, and a philosophy called emotivism. And emotivism is, you know, a complicated thing, but you can basically summarize it as there is no such thing as right and wrong. Only my feeling makes it so.
Right.
You know, the most famous emotivist would probably be Adam Smith, the Wealth of Nations, you know, capitalist guy. But there's a whole strewn of people who were sentimentalists that then led to this culture of emotivism. This is why when we talk about gay marriage, the argument doesn't go further than, but they love each other. Right. It's like, I love love. Right. That's the support of gay marriage. And you're like, we're not saying that they don't love each other. We're not saying that they don't have a strong emotional connection, that they would die for each other. Even what we're saying is it is not a thing that is ordered to the procreation and education of children. And therefore, the type of bond that they want to do, namely the marital act, is not possible in these circumstances.
Right. You can't do it.
And so when we talk about permanence, there is nothing more important in raising a child than that permanence, because it demonstrates to the little child mommy and daddy's love for one another, socialness, right? Like family, all of these things matter.
Well, and vice versa, right? Children affect permanence. Like, you know, the statistics are so clear, right? Like, kids having kids early on, like, there's great numbers for staying together as a couple and things like that. So
now it's funny, whenever we talk about this stuff, when I've done enough marriage prep classes to already hear maybe not the objections, but people want to question everything that we're saying.
I know. Right? I know. Yeah.
And it's because we are hardwired to the default of, but if I'm miserable, I should be able to leave. And it's like, well, define misery. If by miserable, you mean the victim of abuse. Yes. Yes. None of us are saying this, right?
Right.
But if you understand that sometimes marriage is one-sided.
Yeah.
Sometimes it, you know, it might not be like Dave and Amber where she has cancer. Maybe he is depressed, or she is bipolar, or he is an alcoholic, or she is, has an anxiety issue or whatever. And you're still trying to figure out stuff, and they're resistant to talking to counseling. They're resistant to medication. They're resistant to doctors. And it makes life very hard. I know from personal experience, a lot of this stuff makes life very, very hard.
Right.
Almost like the cross.
Exactly. Right. 100%. I remember a priest that we were doing our marriage prep with. That was like a big thing for him, is he was constantly, like when we were doing the prayer marriage prep, it was so awkward because he would make us both put our hands on a cross, a crucifix, because he wanted to remind us how bad it was. And of course, when you're engaged, it's
the last thing you want to hear.
But you don't believe it.
Right.
You don't believe it for one second, right? You're just like so in love and everything like that and everything. But even the best marriages like get hard. But here's what I want to say. At the worst points in my marriage, like, and there were bad, you know, bad situations, like everybody, right? There were bad points. It is the best thing ever, right? Like, it is so awesome, right? Like, to the idea of like, you know, we like just totally enthrone these figures in our culture. Like, who's the guy who does like the ultra marathons, like Goggins or whatever, David Goggins, right? Because he does these amazing things. People who climb Everest, people who do all these things. A family staying together and loving each other in this day and age is 1,000 Everest. Like, it's awesome. It is amazing, and it's worth it. And it's also like, I want to kind of touch on this. I've been talking about like dating and marriage a lot with a friend of mine, because he has kids who are that age now, and of course this is a weird thing that's in my life now again. And we were having this conversation where it was like, you know, like kind of like undecided, like, well, I don't know if this is the right person or something like that. And it's like all these things line up, like they're awesome in the Catholic faith. Yeah. They're going to provide for their family. They have all these things. And I think that we do get into this weird and I'm the worst with this. I convict myself absolutely. Like Ahab, let Ahab beware Ahab, right? That's me. This soulmate idea, right? Where it's like, oh, it's not going to work if we're not soulmates.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Every single day you have to choose. If ever I could pick a spouse on earth, it would have been Amber. And every day I had to choose to love her, right? Like, yeah. And that's insane. If you saw a picture of us, you would be like, how, and you should have thanked God every morning, right? For that woman, right? And I did, but you still have to choose to love. It's a big deal. And it's awesome though. It's awesome. Yeah.
In the Catechism 1609, under the marriage under the pedagogy of the law, it says marriage helps to overcome self-absorption, egoism, pursuit of one's own pleasure, and to open oneself to the other, to mutual aid and to self-giving. And you can see this in your relationship with your spouse and in your relationship with your children, if you're so blessed to have kids. I do want to issue a word of caution, right? Again, this is one of those, huh?
I can't wait to hear.
Well, this is one of those things where I feel like as adults, we can hear these things and we should be able to say, oh, my situation is different because, right? And so, yeah. You know, you have to keep issuing disclaimers. And people who hear this stuff on marriage and marriage's permanence, if their parents are divorced or they themselves are divorced, there can become a hardness of heart or a triggering, you know, unhappy, you know, negative emotions, whatever it is. And you want to discount what we have to say. Maybe your marriage is, or whatever marriage we're talking about, should have been annulled. Like, I'm not saying that, right? So, but the understanding, the fundamental difference between Christian marriage and the marriage of the world, at the time of Christ, polygamy was still a thing. At the time of Christ, women had almost no say in anything when it came to marriage.
Right.
The apostles, Christ, when marriage happens, and it is elevated to the level of what it is in the Lord, you also have the dethroning of the obsession with sex, right? Because underneath, in the catechism, underneath the, you know, Dave listed, you know, marriage in the beginning, and then under the regime of sin, under the pedagogy of the law, marriage in the Lord. Well, then right at the very end is virginity for the sake of the kingdom. And we understand that the gift of sex within the marital bond. I told Dave, I said this wasn't going to be about sex, but we understand that.
Well, we're talking about marriage. It's pretty hard.
I know. It's pretty hard. It is called the marital act, euphemistically. But the gift of sex is not an absolute, right? And understanding that there are some people who marriage is very, very difficult, that you don't maybe trust each other. There's been hurt and wounds. And sometimes it can sound very cavalier the way sometimes we talk about, you know, the marital act and whatnot. But understanding that, you know, we were basically told if Shannon ever got pregnant, she would die.
Right.
So I looked at my Catholic doctor and said, okay. And they said, so you better be the greatest at NFP or refrain.
Yeah.
And so I had to conceive of marriage in these terms, like, can I give everything up for, you know, for her? And the answer is yes, but that doesn't make it easy. Right.
No,
and so,
no.
Right. And there are people who have, you know, who have blood disorders that, if the woman has a blood disorder and she gets pregnant and gives birth, she could die because she, you know, she could bleed out or whatever. There's a million things that happens in the human heart and the human life and the human body that might take away the gift of marriage as you ideally think of it. So what we're saying is that permanence safeguards the union,
right?
Because it allows for a dimension of life and love and mutuality and service to flourish, even if some of the things that you and I conceive of as the ideal key ingredients are taken away or lacking, right?
Yeah, that was great. That was a great explanation. I think you nailed it, and I think you hit right at the heart of a problem that we're like, no one's talking about it, but there's a massive marriage problem in the church. I mean, any church employee knows that a lot of their job is going to be spent on marriage issues.
Whenever I talk with spouses who are preparing, it brought me back watching that Megyn Kelly quote, because I wanted to say to her, like, if she were in my office, what would I say? And I would rehearse this. Like, I have a lot of conversations in my head because I'm lonely. But I would say, Megan, maybe the reason why you keep saying, you know, I don't need God here, I don't need God here, is because for 16 years you've been training your heart to be hard against the commands of the Lord, right? Yeah, and right, emotionally, right, you have built up within yourself a like you knew when you got divorced, and you even say you were friend, you're still friends, you're very good terms with your ex-husband. You knew from the Catholic side of things that it was probably wrong for you to get a divorce, but it was absolutely wrong for you to get married civilly after the divorce. Like maybe right, it was, you know, maybe he was hurting you physically or something. You know, I don't know any of that stuff. But at the end of the day, you got remarried outside the church. You knew that was wrong, but you still believed in the church. You still believed in God, still believed in Catholicism, still believed that Christ is your Lord and Savior. And yet, for 16 years without communion, for 16 years without sacramental confession, that doesn't do anything but wear a person's soul down.
Right.
And so it's no surprise that now you're filling out these documents, and you're just like, "Who? What is the church? Who does the Pope? Where do the cardinals? Who do they think they are?" And it's like, what they think they are is stewards of the mysteries of God, and marriage is a mystery of God. And you knowingly, willingly broke with that mystery. And that's why you're having such a hard time with this. And you want to say, oh, these rules of men, but read Matthew 19. It's the rules of the Lord who made permanence front and center, right? Not the law. The law didn't. It edged, it like moved us step by step closer to it. But Jesus says, what God has joined together, let no man tear asunder. And both her and her ex-husband are Catholic and were married in a church.
Yeah, so there's very little. Yeah. I mean, we don't know the personal aspects of that case, but absolutely there's very little that you can say about that. And I would say that if you would just, like all things with obedience, mm-hmm, if you are in a situation where you feel like I'm like this has gotta be over. Like you wouldn't believe how many times obedience makes you think more clearly and see things more clearly than you did before when you're in disobedience, when you're in rebellion.
Yeah. And I'll never forget a marriage therapist telling me when I was new to marriage preparation, totally secular person. They said, couples that go through hard times within 5 years find that they have a great marriage. Just the problem is most couples go through hard times for 5 years. Very rare. Usually it's about year two that they abandon the marriage. And if they would only hang on for 3 more years, they'd have a good marriage.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's so hurtful. So
that's awful.
Right. Gosh. So one of the things I want to keep framed in people's minds when we talk about the sacrament of holy matrimony, it is rooted in nature, which is why we find it in all cultures. It is under the regime of sin, which is why we find distortions of it, polygamy, adultery, infidelity, jealousy, conflict, domination, discord, hatred, separation. We have all of these things, and those were things numbered in the catechism. But we also can see how an exclusive bond has been somewhat preserved in the majority of these cultures. And we see that in the majority of these cultures, there is what literature we have handed down from ancient cultures to the present. We see that there always is, even in our apocalyptic views of marriage today, there's still a love and a value and an appreciation for marriage, even if we don't think we're attainable to it. And a lot of people have despaired of marriage because they've idealized it out of their own experience, right? Oh, it's this perfect thing. We're always going to be perfect, but I'm not ready for that yet. And it's like, no, you're not, and you never will be.
Will be, not ever.
Yeah. Right. So marriage, under the regime of sin, but also in the order of creation, means you can't let this dream go. You can't let it go. It's an ideal that will live in your heart no matter how much you choose to try to kill it within you, no matter how much sleeping around you do and how much casual relationships you have and all of this stuff that you tell yourself, I don't need. At the end of the day, you want one person to love you forever.
Yeah.
And so you and I need the cross. We need the cross, and I say this all the time in marriage prep, at the center of our marriage, because you are not perfect. They are not perfect. And if you're imperfect, if two imperfect people come together, even without intending, we can hurt one another. We can sin against one another. So the need for forgiveness needs to be bigger than any other thing in the marriage outside commitment. Outside of that commitment, you need to have forgiveness, because otherwise the commitment doesn't last.
I don't want to add anything to that. I think we should take a break. I think cell phones, smartphones are bringing the world to an end, and I hate all apps. That being said, I download the Ascension app and I use it all the time and I love it so much. So if I'm going down on a ship, then that's the one I want to go down on.
The violinist on the Titanic.
I'm just kidding. It's wonderful. You got to download it. The Ascension app is amazing. It's going to be the best Catholic app for sure. And you'll hear a great probably product offering from our friends at Ascension Press. We love being a part of that community. We'll talk to you in a minute.
The Old Testament makes up over half of the Bible, and yet it can be very difficult to understand. I'm Andrew Swofford.
And I'm Jeff Cavins, and we, along with a couple of our fellow Bible scholars, wrote a Catholic Guide to the Old Testament just for that purpose.
Through a Catholic Guide to the Old Testament, you will become better acquainted with the author, main characters, important points of each book of the Old Testament to bring more clarity to the Old Testament.
And it even uses the color-coded Bible Timeline Learning System, which is also used for the Bible in a Year podcast with Father Mike Schmitz and myself.
And one great thing about this book is not only does it take you to the there and then, it also shows you how the New Testament uses each book of the Old Testament and how each book of the Old Testament is used in Catholic tradition.
Understanding each of the individual books of the Old Testament will help you possess a deeper knowledge of the Bible and a greater view of the big picture of God's plan of salvation, which ultimately brings you closer to God.
You can order today at ascensionpress.com/Old Testament.
And we're back. And what we want to do is kind of wrap up today the effects of the sacrament of matrimony. And I think sometimes, we can talk about the reality or the nature of the sacrament of matrimony, its permanence, its exclusivity. But one of the things that we should also talk about is receiving the sacrament. What does it do to me? Right. And the bond is perpetual and exclusive, but this is tied to our vocations, right? So this is what the Catechism says. The consent by which the spouses mutually give and receive one another is sealed by God himself. From their covenant arises an institution confirmed by divine law, even in the eyes of society. The covenant between the spouses is integrated into God's covenant with man. Authentic married love is caught up into divine love.
Boom. Which means that when you love your spouse, you're loving God, right? That you're living out a vocation. So you can literally take your marriage all the way to heaven, right? Marriage will take you all the way to heaven if you live it authentically. There couldn't be anything better, right, than that news, right? And that's the real perspective to have when entering marriage, is that your main job is to get that person to heaven and to get your children to heaven. And that subjugates all the other things that are not near as important as that primary concern right there.
Yeah. By this grace, the grace of matrimony, it's proper to the sacrament. It says the spouses help one another to attain holiness in their married life and in welcoming and educating their children. And so when you think about the sacraments, sometimes I think we kind of divide them up into these seven things, but these seven things are seven ways of participating in the one thing, which is the life of Christ, especially his paschal mystery. And so his death and resurrection, again, the gospel, his death and resurrection, what he did for us, is the foundation of all the sacraments. So if you've been baptized and you speak your consent before God and man in holy matrimony, Christ himself is the source of the grace of holy matrimony. So now the Christian spouses in their relationship, whether or not they have kids, gives Christ to one another. Christ dwells with them, the Catechism says, gives them the strength to take up their crosses and follow him, and to rise again after they have fallen, to forgive and bear one another's burdens, to be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. And let me tell you, sometimes we forget, let me put it that way, to have deliberate action. Deliberate means fully intellectual, like, you know, people say today, were you intentionally doing that, right? Deliberate action. When Dave had talked about in our confession episode about the sacramental grace of confession is especially given to confront those sins.
Right.
My deliberate action after that, these last, like, let me see, I've gone to confession three times, I think, in the last month, two times in the last month, maybe every 2 weeks. And I think about that. And when I come out of the confessional, I'm like, I have grace now specifically to overcome this sin. Yeah. So let's go. And having that deliberate thing in my head gives me deliberate action with my life. And the same is true about matrimony.
Yeah, which is, I mean, not, I don't want to get off topic, but that's the genius of liturgy, right? Liturgy is for everyone in the room. When you go to a marriage, right? When you go to a wedding, it renews your feelings. When you hear those vows, you remember, right? You remember that, which is why you should constantly remind yourself every single day of the vows that you took and of what you promised. Before you even greet your spouse, you should remember those things.
Yeah. Amen. Amen.
Next time, let's talk about the spirituality of marriage. I think that's going to be cool.
Yeah, it'll be our third part, triple part on marriage, and then we'll go into holy orders and wrap up this season focusing on the seven sacraments. So thank you all for joining us. Also, in case you're really inspired by Dave's conversation about liturgy just there, a new podcast has launched called the Becoming God Podcast.
I can't believe you used me to promote your new podcast with somebody
Dave,
else.
I will step on the necks of all of my friends and family in order to promote myself.
What about the vows we took at the beginning of this podcast?
Never to cross promote podcast. You swore to me there were witnesses. But no, Becoming God with Christopher Carsons and Michael Gormley. That's actually the title. I didn't mean for that to be the title. The title was supposed to be the Becoming God Podcast. But instead it's called Becoming God Podcast with Christopher Carsons and Michael Gormley. So you'll at least see that whole thing there. It's in Apple a bunch of podcast apps kind of populate their content through Apple's directory. So it's in Spotify and it's on Apple. So I would encourage our listeners, if they want to learn liturgy, not liturgy wars, but from the perspective of divinization, theosis, that's what our conversation is about. So how do I become God through sacred liturgy? What he is by nature, I will be by grace. So episode 2 is already out.
Awesome.
Yeah.
God bless.
Adios.